We asked Ron Van Dam how he thinks he comes across to his listening audience.
Bubbly and wonderful and funny all the time.
Wait, what? Whoa. Hold on. Have you listened to yourself recently? And by recently, I mean any time in the last 30 years of broadcasting? Because, wow. Okay, live the dream, Ronnie. You are listening to Ron Van Dam on New England Broadcasting.
What? I'm not bubbly?
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
I thought I was bubbly.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
My nickname in high school was Bubbles. I don't understand. I thought I was bubbly. I thought I was like Michael Bublé. I thought I was bubbly. Maybe I've lost my bubbles. Oh my God, where's my bubbles? I do have a lot of gas every once in a while. Does that make me bubbly? I think it does. Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. Obviously, thanks for being here. Make yourself comfortable. This will take about half an hour, and when it's all over, you can do what you want. Or maybe you can multitask and do something else while you're listening to the show. I really don't know. Damn, I thought I was bubbly. I thought I was somewhat bubbly. This is bothering me. Ever happen to you, somebody tells you something that's a little bit derogatory? Like, my goodness, your face is not pretty. Things like that, you know? Or like, oh, what's that on your face? Is that a mole or do you have some type of horrible disease? Things like that, you know, it just kind of sticks with you for the rest of the day. And you go running to a mirror to make sure that what they said was not accurate. And then you wonder, well, maybe it is accurate and I'm just seeing myself differently. Mirrors are interesting things. I'm not going to talk about this for the whole show. Don't worry about it. Actually, I have a very interesting guest coming up in the second half of the program. We're talking about immigration, not irrigation for your lawn. Immigration for your country. It's been a problem that no one's been able to solve for quite some time now. We all agree that immigration's a good thing. Most of us are ancestors of immigrants, perhaps immigrants ourselves. I don't know, but I mean, it's okay. It works out. But the signs in front of the parking garage, no vacancy, man. We're full. We're full. We like to take care of our people in this country, and it's becoming a big task because we're full. We don't have, you know, we don't have enough bananas for everybody. It's a problem. Other countries, kind of more of a problem, like in Europe. I mean, there's like, you don't even know you're stepping into another country. I mean, the borders are just like signs. So, immigration's a problem all over the place. Now, of course, with that Israeli-Hamas war thing, this is a dire need. So, So we're going to talk today with an expert on this particular subject and see if there's any answers to these things. Can it be a simple answer? Is it bogged down by bureaucracy and politics, or is it actually a difficult situation that there is no resolve? Anyway, it's very interesting to me how we think of ourselves. Either we think that we're wonderful, powerful people, and actually maybe we're not. And when someone says, you know, you're a weak person, I thought I was a strong person. Things like that, you know. all someone has to do is just say something derogatory to you, and it just blows a hole in your whole day and sometimes your whole life. It's like bullying. You know, when a kid comes up to you and says, you know, you're ugly, which is a bullying thing to say, that can destroy a person for years and years and sometimes a whole lifetime. We're very impressionable. We claim to be mighty and powerful, but we're very impressionable. Even that guy, Donald Trump, you know him? Do you know this guy? He thinks he's this big mogul and guy that can solve everything. And then someone makes a derogatory comment and he just falls apart. He gets defensive and he calls them a name. You know, it becomes very childish because he can't handle that stuff. It's funny how when we look in the mirror, we say to ourselves, ooh, you're looking good, you know? And then you go outside and it's like, man, I guess I don't look that good. Compared to the other people, I don't look that good. Yeah. Even models think that they look ugly. Even models think they look ugly on the covers of magazines, chosen to put themselves in front of the public by publicists and magazine owners and movies. And they go out in public and they think, wow, but they have image complex problems. What? You people have image complex problems? You're beautiful models. No, we're not beautiful. Do you ever walk into a place and think, oh, all right, I'm looking all right. And then you go into the bathroom at the restaurant and you look in the mirror and you go, whoa, that's not what I look like. Wait a minute. I always found that funny because I spent many years of my life as a videographer at a video company, a media company, still do. And we would do industrial videos and all kinds of videos, I mean, every kind of video you can think of. And we would videotape commercials, and the people in the videos, they would look at the video afterwards and say, oh, that doesn't look like me at all. Oh, it's you. Oh, no, it does look like you. I mean, it's a video of you. It's like in radio. I mean, in doing that forever, and when people come on the air and they hear their voice on the show after the fact, they say, that doesn't sound like me. No, it sounds exactly like you. It's an exact replica of you. Whoa. Our impression of ourselves is not necessarily the impression that other people have. We kind of appear in our minds as being young and attractive and skinny and looking good and in these clothes, you know, and then you look in the mirror and you go, whoa, wait a minute. That's not me. Who is that in the mirror? No, it's you. I don't look like that. In your mind, you don't look like that. But in real life, unfortunately, you do. There was something online I saw about a month or two ago. And it showed all the top models, Christy Brinkley and all those other people. I don't even know their names. Whatever. They looked, you know, these models. And then they showed what the models look like without makeup on. I don't know how they got pictures of these ladies without their makeup on, because we see them always in their makeup, dressed beautifully. But in this online little expose, the models had no makeup on. And I got to tell you something, yucky. I don't know if yucky is a word for it. They just look like us. They had some pretty features and stuff, but not, you see, because we're used to seeing them so made up and so airbrushed, that when you meet them in person, it's like, oh, you look normal. I know, I am normal. No, you're not normal. You're a top model. You're in photographs. Those are all airbrushed, and I'm a model because they paint my face. My face is a canvas to the makeup artists. Those aren't my clothes.
They're provided for me. I get to keep them sometimes, but they're provided. By the way, did you like my impression of a female model? Sounds just like one, doesn't it? Yeah, I know. I know you're right. It's fascinating to me how our impressions of ourselves are kind of in our minds. And that's okay, because that gets us through the day. I was thinking a couple of years ago of writing a book during the pandemic, and it would have been called Don't Look in the Mirror. Sounds like a horror film, and in a way it is. But if you want to feel good about yourself, don't look in the mirror. That's not going to help you. That ain't going to make you feel wonderful. Don't look in the mirror. We need some kind of scary, horror, dramatic music for that. Who is that? That's not me. It is you. No, it's not. It is. I don't look like that. Well, then how do you explain the mirror image? It's odd. For the longest time, I couldn't figure out mirrors. I thought they were a direct reflection when I was a kid, and then I realized, no, they're backwards. Everything's backwards, but the left side of my face is now on the right side, and that freaked me out for, I'd say about 17 years. It took me a while to figure that one out. Well, it's a mirror. I mean, that's a reflection of me. Yeah, but opposite. It's a reflection, but you're on the other side of yourself now. I don't know. I don't understand how that's possible. I know. Then when selfies came along, you know, hey, wait a minute. How's the chair on the right side? The chair is actually on the left side. It's a mirror image of you in the selfie. I don't understand. I know it's a lot to get. A lot to encompass in your head, isn't it? Selfies, man. Oh, God. Every time I take a selfie of myself, I say to myself, why? What am I doing? What am I doing? Why am I preserving a picture of myself when I don't even like to look in the mirror? Some people love that. Some women just love to look in the mirror. Well, look at me. Look at me. Whoa. Men don't have that image of themselves. Men don't go, look at me. Some do, most don't. I guess when women are looking in the mirror and being fascinated with themselves, they are basically looking at self-art. The way that they've painted their face, the way that they draped fabric on their bodies, they're really taking pictures of that as opposed to themselves. They're taking pictures of the facade that they've created. I must take a picture of this facade that I've created because it's very attractive and very beautiful, like a piece of art. I don't think women or men take selfies of themselves when they get out of bed with their eyes drooping and saliva dripping out of the corner of their mouth and moles encompassing their entire cheek. I don't think people are taking pictures. So I say, don't look in the mirror unless you have to. But other than that, do yourself a favor. Don't look in the mirror. The image that you have of yourself in your head, go with that one. That makes a little more sense. Get you through the day a little bit easier. We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about immigration, not irrigation. Immigration, shall we? But first, times are changing, aren't they?
Hi, I'm Gary Filkington, founder, owner, and operator of Filkington Gender Warehouse in picturesque West Bridgewater. We've got genders for all occasions here, for sale, lease, or hourly rental. There's no need whatsoever for you to agonize over what gender floats your proverbial boat. You can choose from one or more of our selection of over 30,000 government-certified genders of the highest quality. Come on in and talk to one of our qualified gender specialists, or feel free to browse around in our vast three-story gender showroom. Whether you're a boy or a girl or a genuflecting peach pit or whatever, you're guaranteed to find a gender that'll show the world you're something special. And while you're here, if you gotta use the can, it's open season, baby. Go wherever your spirit takes you. Filkington Gender Warehouse is open weekdays till 8 p.m. until 2 a.m. on Saturday for your late-night gender action. Surprise your friends, piss off your parents, get special treatment at your job with a brand new Filkington Gender, Filkington Gender Warehouse. We identify as being at 367 East Route 43 in West Bridgewater, so maybe go there.
Joachim Reinman joins us now. He's a PhD, and we're talking about the cultural and social dynamics of the immigrant concept. You are a German immigrant yourself, I understand.
Yes, I was born in Berlin and then later lived in a mid-sized, then West German town called Marburg before my family immigrated to the U.S. when I was 10 years old.
Okay. Well, you know, this is a problem in this country, apparently. It's been talked about for decades and decades and decades with no real resolve. What are your views on that?
Well, I think, as you said, things have been tried. I've lived along the U.S.-Mexico border for essentially, other than 2 years, my entire existence.
Okay.
In El Paso, now in San Diego, my wife and co-author and fellow psychologist is from Eagle Pass.
Uh-huh.
It's, you know, it's all the cities and towns that you hear about on the news every day with the migration issue. It's hugely complex, but I think there's some things that we could do to mitigate that a little bit. Depends on what you want to get into at this point in the conversation.
Yeah.
But I can talk about that a little bit if you would like.
Yes, I would, because it's a confusing issue for many. Most Americans know that there is a situation and a problem, but they don't understand the workings of it or anything like that because they don't keep up with things. It's interesting to me that European countries are so much smaller in land size, and yet they've been taking on immigrants fairly successfully for quite a period of time. Has that been a successful situation in Europe, in your opinion?
I have some contacts still in Germany these days through friends and relatives, mm-hmm. and people are in law enforcement over there and so on. And it's a mixed bag like anything.
Okay.
I think overall that they have been reasonably successful. Mm-hmm. You know, Merkel brought in over a million people to Germany.
Right.
France and Italy are less inclined towards immigrants, even though France has a huge population from North Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that they have systematically done reasonably well in terms of working with folks on integrating into a new culture.
Yeah.
I don't remember his name. We've had some contact with it. But an example is that there's a mayor, a Syrian refugee who was elected mayor in a smaller German town.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things can move along under the right circumstances. But it's also true that Merkel caught some political blowback from letting folks in at the level that she did. I tell people I'm German everywhere except in Germany.
I have some pride
in the fact that she was able to do that.
I understand that completely. Even sometimes in America, sometimes when I, sometimes you get a little confused as far as what's going on in your allegiance. Isn't it a situation like in a parking garage where if all the spaces are filled and there's no place to build more spaces, that you put a sign out front that says there's no vacancy, you have to wait till somebody leaves? Is it as simple as that at a point? Because I mean, how much longer can one fill up the tank until the gas spills over?
Right. So I think there are a couple of general premises. Premise number one is that we know through this has been formally studied, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that immigration as a basic you know, circumstance
yes.
has the potential to be very helpful
mm-hmm.
and drive the economic engine to some degree of the country who's receiving them.
Correct.
So we can accept that immigration as a basic format, if done in viable levels, is actually a pretty good thing.
Absolutely.
And all the scenarios, you know, the scenarios about they're all criminals and all that stuff.
No.
Yeah. And so then we get to the idea that even eating too much cotton candy is a bad thing.
Yes.
So the question is, at what point do we in fact say, you know, we are, as you say, we're full.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much that I think the country is full. It's that the system that we have in place to process new immigrants
mm-hmm.
is full.
Oh, yes.
So, and, you know, one of the things that you hear about the news every day is that, you know, what's happening, for example, in New York City, where their system is overwhelmed. And it's not that New York City maybe couldn't handle as a final destination, couldn't handle the volume, but it's that what they have in terms of services for new arrivals,
right.
that's totally overwhelmed.
Right.
So then the question is, you know, what is it that you do? And there are a couple of things. I do think that in some ways, Eric Adams, who's the New York City mayor,
yes.
has, I don't know about the execution of the idea, but he has some right idea that he goes to the countries of origin and says, look, folks, we're kind of at a breaking point here. And we have to understand that what people on the ground who are migrating out of desperation are thinking about, and the information they get is usually from smugglers and criminal elements that mm-hmm. say, yeah, you know, the borders are open, just come on down, we'll help you, just pay us your, you know, thousands of dollars, we'll get you up there and life will be wonderful.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's their sales rep, and that's right. a bill of goods.
Right, and it's wrong.
And so yeah. somehow that needs to be countered.
Yes.
And one of the ways I would think it can be countered is through social media in the area, because let me give you an example. I've been working with East African refugees as a psychologist in San Diego for many, many years. Some of them have literally zero education because that's kind of the norm. But they know more about their cell phones than I do.
Correct.
And so, you know, and so I think even though the whole apply to asylum in before you enter the U.S. had some limitations simply because, number one, you need to be able to charge your phone. Yeah. And like countries, folks, you know, systems in the telephone can become overwhelmed as well, and websites can break down and so on. But I think the basic idea of reaching out through the media and saying, okay, here's the real deal if you go up there. This is a, you know, international politics and uh-huh. scenario, but I think there has to be more coordination between countries in terms of divvying up who can, you know, who can go where and what's viable and what country it can accept
yeah.
A number of people, rather than having the U.S. be the only
exactly.
Solution.
Exactly.
And I know everybody wants to come to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Germany, everybody wanted to come to the U.S. It's yeah. the New York skyline. Nobody talks about the gas stations in the middle of nowhere in Nevada.
Right.
Because everybody, you know, that sort of thing. But that's the perception. But even within the United States, what the distribution is of refugees within different locations with the U.S. could certainly be handled in a reasonable sort of way. I'm not talking about, you know, political busing schemes for PR.
I know.
What I'm talking about is, for example, the Office of Refugee Resettlement has mm-hmm. been distributing folks based on kind of an economic and social formula that they have. Now, that goes to refugees, not all immigrants, but it gives you an idea of how this could be done. I would get people like from Somali origins, and I'd say, well, where did you live before you came to the San Diego? And they'd say, Kansas. Yeah. Or mm-hmm. Georgia, or what the yeah. heck were you doing yeah. there? And that's where ORR placed us. And I think there's a similar system in Europe, particularly Germany, that goes through this process, so that the distribution of immigrants who don't have, let's say, family members who can take them in,
yeah,
it's more viable.
Definitely more viable. Yeah. Well, there's two types of immigration situations. There's one fleeing another country. And there's those that want to set up a life of enrichment for their families and purposely make that move. So that's, I guess, are they separate situations? Should they be treated separately?
Well, there is a, you know, there is some difference, obviously, but, you know, the reality is that immigrants are a very diverse population.
Right.
And they're... I came in to the U.S. on basically a welcome mat because my father had certain skills in electron microscopy right. that made him right. A viable, you know, addition to the U.S. And so that's one thing.
Yes.
There's still the new language learning and a lot of other adaptation, which is true across immigrant groups. But right. then there is, you know, migration for a better life, which is, it's not the same as I'm going to be dead because I stay at home.
Exactly.
Because there are people who are going to get me.
Exactly.
But you can also understand that from a certain standpoint, if people are in extreme poverty, that you can understand that they say there's absolutely nothing for me here and I need to find someplace else.
Yeah.
And now how many people you take in is a different question, but the reality is, again, even at regardless of the SES level, the economic level that mm-hmm. people come in on, they do, as a group, they're a hugely resilient bunch. I mean, the stuff you have to go, number one, to leave where you're familiar with, and number two, to make the journey is not an easy task. So people who do that and manage to get through it, they have some pretty positive qualities that you need to think about.
Oh, there are many. Yes. I mean, as Americans, we don't just eat American food. I mean, we love other cultures.
Right.
It's, I mean, most of us do. I mean, I think the attitude is definitely proper and enrichment for this country has been since the beginning of the concept of immigration. Yes. But how you handle it is a, right. I guess, a political problem now more than anything, which is,
yeah,
when you talk political, you're talking, oh, my God.
Yeah. I try very hard to stay out of politics.
Yeah, I know, but you know.
And tackling a political hot potato, which I'm not sure how those two things go together.
Yeah.
Not that I don't have an opinion, but I try to be a kind of a professional about this.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the reality is that we're pretty much stuck in terms of political action on just about everything.
Correct.
I mean, I'm thinking about DACA. And if there's one low-hanging fruit in all of this in terms of what to do with immigrant population, that should be an absolute no-brainer.
Right.
It's an obvious thing. And, I mean, the DA in DACA stands for Deferred Action. Which is pretty much the state
that's
of our government so far.
It's in the dictionary. I wish we could speak longer, but we have time restraints here. How can we get more information about this or check out something that you're doing here website-wise?
I'm at immigrantscreening.com, so you can look that up.
Good.
That website talks about the books we've put out. We put out a series, actually, of two books. The third one's about to come out. And it looks at the perspective of not so much who gets to come in and who has to stay out, but rather a certain number of folks are going to be here. So how can we be helpful to allow those folks who are going to be here and stay succeed?
Mm-hmm.
The website also has a number of needs assessments that are free that you know, you can download the PDF there.
Great.
you know, links to a bunch of peer-reviewed publications that we've done while we were in academia that that are available on that website. So at immigrantscreen.com, it covers both a big book series, our services, and what else we've done in the past.
Perfect. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. I hope we can do this again. Well, that'll do it for me today. You've been wonderful as usual. Thank you so much for your indulgence. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program, but until that time arrives, don't look in the mirror, and I wish you peace.